Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Senate Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 1:07 p.m. in the Senate Finance Room. Today is February 22nd, and I'm joined by Co-Chair Olson, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel. I am Senator Merrick. This afternoon, we will continue to take public testimony on Senate Bill 186, the FY25 operating budget, Senate Bill 187, the FY capital budget, Senate Bill 188, the FY mental health budget. We will be limiting testimony to 2 minutes. Please be respectful to your fellow Alaskans who would also like to participate. And we ask that you keep your comments focused on the budget bills, not a time to comment on policy bills. Today we will be hearing from Anchorage and the Kenai Peninsula, as well as the Mat-Su Valley. We will let Senator Wilson take testimony from the Mat-Su. And if you would like to testify today, you need to sign up by 2:30 p.m. We will begin here in the room. First, we have Rob Duschmal, the city manager of Homer. If you could come to the table, place yourself on the record, begin your two-minute testimony. Following will be Lisa Parker, if you would come up as well. Thank you, and welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you. So good afternoon. My name is Rob Duschmal. I'm the city manager for Homer, Alaska, and the city is working on a regionally significant harbor expansion program right now in partnership with the state of Alaska and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. We're requesting the inclusion of $288,523 in the capital budget in support of continued efforts related to our harbor expansion's general investigation. The city of Homer has set aside a match amount and the same amount, and we're expecting significant contribution from the federal government as well. An expansion of Homer's harbor would help keep large vessels in Alaska. And it also create benefits for the more than 40 non-road connected communities in the state that depend on us for transportation and commerce. So with that, thank you very much for your time, and I'll turn it on to the next person.
Thank you. We appreciate you being here. Lisa Parker, followed by Brian Hawkins. Ms. Parker, if you place yourself on the record, and please begin your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, Senator Merrick, members of the Senate Finance Committee. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon. My name is Lisa Parker. I am on the Soldotna City Council. I am here today on behalf of the Alaska Municipal League, where I serve as the vice president. Two issues I would like to discuss today. First is the increase of the BSA. AML members have placed a priority on supporting public education, especially since so many of our members have municipal school districts and are contributing a local contribution. This is a significant portion of these budgets and has been increasing as a portion of the total funding received by school districts. Essentially, local governments are giving more as valuation increases, even as the state contribution has been flat. Local governments don't have the capacity or tax base to make for a state contribution that isn't keeping up with inflation. This is a fundamental responsibility of the state. Secondly, we'd like to address community jails. In the last few years, the state has increased community jails budget to be more consistent with past levels of reimbursement for these expenses made on behalf of the state's public safety system. At the same time, $10 million remains less than what local governments are spending on these community jails. We encourage continued increases, including with a supplemental budget, where we would note the Department of Corrections has asked for increased funding for the state jails due to higher costs this year. We estimate the need for community jails to be an additional $1 million in the supplemental budget. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Parker. Next, we have Brian Hawkins, the Port Director of the City of Homer, followed by Anna Brawley. Welcome, Mr. Hawkins. Please place yourself on the record and begin your two-minute testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is, through the chair, my name is Brian Hawkins. I'm the Port Director for the City of Homer. I wanted to follow up with comments on the port expansion and the additional funding needed to continue this study with the Corps of Engineers. The additional funding ask, again, is $288,000. And I guess the question would be that you probably want to know is why Homer? Why would we be interested, as the Corps of Engineers would take an interest in coming to Homer and building another harbor? And there's a lack of moorage for large vessels in the state of Alaska. We are maxed out in Homer. We're rafting these vessels, sometimes five abreast. And these are large vessels, up to 180 feet long. And the fact is that we turn vessels away. And there's additional vessels that can't even come into the harbor because of their size. So we haven't kept up with the needs of the fleet in Alaska. And why Homer is because there's a shallow bench just outside the harbor that we can actually grow this facility out onto. And we're road connected and multimodal facility that our fleet that is in Homer now and works out of the Homer Harbor works throughout the state of Alaska, western Alaska, even into the Arctic. And they come home in the winter for winter moorage. So that's why the Corps has taken an interest into this study. I'd like to change hats briefly. I'm also the president of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Directors. And as you're probably aware, we have a matching grant program called the Alaska Municipal Harbors Grant Program. And so that's a 50-50 match funding for harbor-related floats, gangways, to rebuild our harbors in the state, recapitalize them. It's a program that's been going on since 2006. And this year's ask for the Municipal Harbor Grant Program is $5 million.
Okay. Thank you so much for your testimony. We appreciate you coming in today. We have Anna Brawley with the Municipality of Anchorage Assembly, followed by Storm Hansen. If you would come up, please. Ms. Brawley, welcome.
Thank you. Anna Brawley, Anchorage Assembly. First, I want to acknowledge that I'm coming to you as a representative of the largest community in the state. My district, West Anchorage, I represent about 49,000 people. But the work that we do on the assembly, we do for the whole city, from the Kinnick River down to Portage. And so I look at everybody in the city as a constituent. Beyond the people of our districts, we each have communities in our district, just as you all have communities in your districts. And so I would like to come to you suggesting the municipality is a constituent of the legislature, just as all local governments are. So I come to this table as a constituent, hand in hand with all local governments in Alaska, to ask you to invest in three things in the FY25 budget: to invest in our communities, to invest in our infrastructure, and to invest in hope for the future for all people of this state. Local governments, especially the municipality, are investing in ourselves. We've made local investments in housing. We ask our voters to support roads and school bonds, and we continue to transform our public safety system and crisis response to treat people in crisis. But our investments alone are just not enough. We have more options than many of our peers. I will acknowledge that as well. So I would like to also ask that you make key investments in infrastructure, in housing, in public safety, not just in Anchorage, but in all of our communities, so that we can continue to determine our own future and build it together. If our own residents do not see a future for themselves, then our state and our communities cannot thrive. Which brings me to the word hope. On the assembly, we grapple with the problems of today. Many of those problems are the consequences of choices that were made of people that came before us, maybe decades before, and I recognize that you all are in the same position. You're grappling with those difficult consequences. But our most important work that we do on the assembly is thinking ahead to tomorrow, to next year, to the next 50 years, and really how we can keep moving that needle toward prevention, toward working toward the future. And I know that's a big discussion now with energy. How do we get ourselves out of the hole we're in now and forward? So our biggest ask for Anchorage and for all communities is hope. I won't pretend to know the right answers on the hard choices before you, but please invest in our future, both for our communities and our state.
Thank you very much, Ms. Brawley. Next, from the city of Homer, Storm Hansen. Welcome to Senate Finance. Please place yourself on the record. Begin your two-minute testimony.
Thank you. My name is Storm Hansen. I'm a city council member from Homer, Alaska, and I'm here to thank you for the consideration of the extra $288,000 we need for the GIS study for the investigation for the Port Harbor expansion. For me, you know, I can give you stats and numbers on what the Corps of Engineers requires from us, but I was born in Anchorage, raised in Homer, and the harbor was somewhere where I used to play and walk around, and it was full of industry, and I see a decline in that, and I feel like we could use that support so we can build that up again. It's not just about tourism. It's about providing jobs and opportunities, not just for Homer, but the regions around us that use us, like across the bay, Port Graham, Nunwalloc, Sodovia, Kodiak, King Cove, et cetera. So appreciate that. On another note, I'm a parent of six kids who've been going to school at public school, the same schools I go to in Homer, Alaska, and I support the extra BSA. Excuse me. So, thank you very much.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Ms. Hansen, for being with us today. We will move to the Homer LIO. We have Mike Jones. Welcome to Senate Finance. Please place yourself on the record and begin your two-minute testimony.
Thank you. I'm Mike Jones, Homer resident, speaking for myself. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. From what I've seen of the budget process, we're on track to yet again take away the PFD to fund special interests. Reducing the PFD is the most regressive tax option available. It hurts the lowest income people the most. Some of the special interests seeking to benefit from government are hidden in bills supporting renewable portfolio standards, clean energy standards, and community energy facilities. In each case, these special interests are asking for a handout, whether it be a guaranteed revenue stream or a direct subsidy through mandates. State governments should not be involved in such things when existing market-based mechanisms already provide the opportunity to facilitate implementation of these pet projects. One market mechanism would be to stop funding special interests and pay a full PFD. This way, low-income households would get the funding they need. The upper-income households could choose to use their PFD to fund special interests they are passionate about. Let the special interests compete for funding from PFD recipients through Pick, Click, Give, or some other market-based subscription mechanism to fund their pet projects. If the community really wants to fund a project, they can support it with their PFD dollars. On another note, are we really going to fail to learn from the past and create a defined benefits program for public workers? The retention arguments are compelling neither as to their effectiveness nor their need. Are we really going to provide government employees with an out-of-market benefit and slap the private sector in the face? Really? Let's look at our current indebtedness from the past venture in defined benefits and learn from it. Let's look at California, which is forecasting to have a $73 billion budget deficit, and observe what big government looks like. Let's learn and make good choices. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jones. We appreciate you calling in. I'll remind callers, please keep your comments to the budget, not policy bills at this time. We will now move to the Kenai LIO. We have Sherry Smith. Sherry, please state your name for the record and begin your two-minute testimony.
Hi, my name is Sherry Smith. I live in Kenai, and I'm the executive director of the Lee Shore Center, which provides emergency shelter and advocacy services to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. I'd like to thank the chair and members of the committee for the opportunity to provide testimony on the governor's budget. I'm calling to request $4 million to be added into the CDBSA budget line. For the past 5 years, we've been flat funded, and at no time has our funding kept pace with rising costs annually. We lost one advocate position in fiscal year 23 due to flat funding. And as it stands now, if the funding, additional funding is not put into the CDBSA grant line, we're looking at a 20% decrease in funding, which would mean I would be forced to cut more advocate positions, which would have a huge negative impact on our ability to provide services to victims who desperately need our help in the community. One of those positions is for legal advocacy to help victims through the criminal justice process, assisting them with filing for protection orders, providing assistance with victim crime compensation, being there with victims during the court proceedings, and much more. Just in the last fiscal year, we had 182 requests for protection order assistance and 945 requests for legal court assistance. And without this position, we're going to be unable to assist any of those victims with their legal advocacy needs. I'd like to remind people that, you know, domestic violence and sexual assault programs around the state respond to immediate safety needs of community members, those who've been physically and sexually assaulted. We're part of the first responders within a community, and our job doesn't end after the initial contact. Besides providing safe shelter, we help victims through the trauma they've experienced, provide advocacy and resources they need to stay safe and heal. So funding's not added in, our agency is going to be losing more of our advocate staff. There's nowhere else to take the cuts except with staffing. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. We appreciate you calling in, and we appreciate the good work that you do. We will now move to OffNet in Anchorage. We have the CEO of Thread, Stephanie Berglund. Welcome to Senate Finance. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, chairs and committee. I'm Stephanie Berglund, the CEO of Thread, the child care resource and referral nonprofit in Alaska. For 38 years, our staff has worked directly with child care programs and early educators across the state, and we know firsthand how broken and precarious our child care sector is right now. That's why I'm asking for you to invest in child care as the critical infrastructure that it is. Please add $30.5 million to the FY25 operating budget in the child care benefits line item to ensure access to the affordable and quality child care that Alaskans deserve. North Dakota did it with a similar population to Alaska. They just invested $66 million a year in their child care sector. We've seen many other states invest with great success, and Alaska should be competitive and follow suit. One-time investments in childcare, including the federal COVID-19 relief money and the additional $8.5 million that the state has invested the last 2 years, has provided necessary relief and some needed stability to the childcare sector, and I thank you for your support in last year's budget. But this money ends in June at a time when our sector has not recovered and childcare needs support the most. Not adding investment to the operating budget will mean that Alaska will continue to see childcare businesses close. 148 businesses already have, and that's resulted in more families not being able to work, live, or stay in our state. No investment means employers will see increased problems with recruiting and retaining skilled workers. Right now, an estimated 25,000 parents in Alaska could work if only they had access to childcare. And not adding state investment will mean fewer children are ready and prepared for school, which translates to increased special needs services and overall lower test scores and graduation rates. The time to act is now. We can't afford more child care program closures. Small businesses are the backbone of child care in Alaska, and that's why I'm asking you to support them and the Alaskan families they serve with an addition of $30.5 million to the child care benefits line item. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berglund. In Anchorage, we have the CEO of the Blood Bank of Alaska, Bob Scanlon. Welcome to Senate Finance. Place yourself on the record and begin testimony, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Bob Scanlon. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for Blood Bank of Alaska. I appear today telephonically to thank you for the $2 million in the capital budget of fiscal year 2022 for the Blood Bank of Alaska and the creation of its donor testing laboratory, and to respectfully request your consideration and support for the remaining funding to complete the project. Funding would be leveraged by the Blood Bank of Alaska to end a serious vulnerability to Alaska blood supply by making Blood Bank of Alaska wholly self-sufficient in the area of donor testing and reference laboratory services through the establishment of a donor testing and reference laboratory. The full new appropriation of $2 million is necessary to make this effort a reality, provide Alaska with donor testing infrastructure forever. Donor testing, which is currently being done for Blood Bank of Alaska, is out of state in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's currently a substantial bottleneck and ongoing vulnerability to blood supply operations and availability in the event of medical trauma and or declared state or national emergency. This year to date, BBA and the state has suffered consistent flight delays or cancellations, whereby tubes are unable to fly out of the state for testing due to airport closures, volcanic activity, airport mechanicals, and of course our typical winter storms. This jeopardized the ability of the Blood Bank to assure blood product availability across the state. For a number of years, Blood Bank of Alaska has worked towards the establishment of the donor testing lab in Alaska, which would assure self-sufficiency, alleviating the threat of such disruptions to operations of the Blood Bank due to such things as airspace closure caused by volcanic or seismic activity, airline disruptions, and or state or national emergency. Additional threats include such things as civil unrest in the lower 48, weather issues, and of course, weather space issues outside of Alaska. By Blood Bank of Alaska becoming self-sufficient, Alaska is assured of predictability, consistency, versatility, and shorter response times in the event of disaster as regards to state blood supply, not only for our major population centers, but to an even larger extent, Alaska's rural communities and healthcare providers. To close, we're requesting $2 million to be included in the capital budget for the Blood Bank of Alaska to complete necessary and critical infrastructure in Alaska. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Scanlon. In Anchorage, a board member with the Alaska Blood Bank, Chris Mello, welcome to Finance. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Christopher Mello, and I'm on the board of directors for the Blood Bank of Alaska. I'm also speaking in support of a $2 million appropriation so that we can complete the donor testing lab. One of the challenges that we face in Alaska is that there are only about a half dozen labs nationally that provide testing services for all of the blood centers in the lower 48. These labs all operate at about 100% capacity. If any one of these labs go down, all of the blood centers that use that lab are going to be scrambling for another lab to test their blood while that one lab is down. A small blood center like Alaska, which only does about 25 or 30,000 units a year, is going to absolutely go to the back of the line. Because of our geographic location and our isolation, it's very important for us to be able to have our own donor testing lab. I would also add that the donor testing lab was included in the original appropriation. Starting in about 2009 up to 2014, we received money from the legislature to design and construct this beautiful blood bank that we have here in Anchorage. It serves the entire state. The last tranche of money was in 2014, was supposed to be in 2014, which included money to build the donor testing lab. Price of oil dropped, things changed, and we weren't able to receive that money. So we're kind of coming back now to complete this project as it was originally intended and originally designed. So we would hope that the state of Alaska would consider funding the last $2 million to complete our donor testing lab. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mello. Next, with the Blood Bank of Alaska, the Colonel Julie Grashen. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Julie Grashen, and I recently retired as a Fulbert Colonel and commander of the 176th Medical Group at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. It is part of the Alaska National Guard. The relationship between the military and the Blood Bank of Alaska is strong and positive. And I want to illustrate a couple of reasons why. The active duty hospital here in Anchorage receives its blood supply from the Blood Bank of Alaska. So if the 176th Wing search and rescue unit is called out to the villages to provide life-saving services, it reaches out to the active duty hospital for its blood supply. Another example and scenario is if Alaska is faced with one of its darkest days through a natural disaster and it is in dire need of massive amounts of blood supply, it will reach out to the Blood Bank of Alaska for the needed products. So why is donor testing so important? Because in order to receive a blood supply and then push it out to the community and the constituents in need, it needs to be tested. Right now, based on the tyranny of distance from Alaska to its testing resources, we lack a timeliness and a delay to provide the need of blood if a mass casualty happens here in Alaska. So with this money, we provide greater capabilities and response time. So thank you very much for considering this funding need for the Blood Bank of Alaska.
Thank you, Colonel Grashen. Now we will move to Jen Griffins with the VP of Policy and Advocacy, the Alaska Children's Trust. Welcome to Senate Finance. Please place yourself on the record and begin testimony.
Good afternoon, members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Jen Griffiths. I'm Vice President of Policy and Advocacy at Alaska Children's Trust. I would like to thank you for your previous support for early childhood funding and request your leadership in increasing Alaska's investment in early childhood programs for the fiscal year 25 operating budget. As the statewide lead organization focused on the prevention of child abuse and neglect, we advocate for policies that increase economic security for families and provide foundational early education support for children. Alaska's early childhood programs, specifically Head Start and the Child Care Assistance and Grant programs, support both of these goals. Currently, half of Alaskan families say they can't participate in the workforce to the extent they would prefer due to child care issues. According to Kids Count 2023, Alaska ranks 44th in the nation for economic well-being, and 34% of Alaska children have parents that lack secure employment. Parents who are able to access childcare report reduced stress and increased economic stability, both important societal factors for decreasing the risk of child abuse and neglect. To support increased access to early education programs and increased workforce opportunities for Alaska's parents, Alaska Children's Trust is requesting two targeted investments. The first is an additional $5.2 million for Alaska's Head Start programs. This amount will allow these programs to meet the full 20% federal match requirement. In many of Alaska's rural communities, Head Start is the only childcare option available to families. Additionally, we are requesting a $30.5 million increase in the state's current funding for Alaska's childcare program. This amount is what early childhood stakeholders have identified for several years as what is needed to stabilize the childcare sector. It would support recommendations from the Governor's Childcare Task Force by increasing funding for both childcare assistance and the childcare grant programs. By investing in both childcare and Head Start, you can help support comprehensive access to affordable early childhood programs across the state. Thank you for your leadership on this important issue.
Thank you, Ms. Griffiths. We appreciate your testimony today. We will go to Nikiski now. Harrison Deaver with the Nikiski Fire Department. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Harrison Deaver, and I'm a paramedic and a firefighter with Nikiski Fire Department. I want to speak specifically to the mobile crisis and mobile integrated healthcare budget items. We have had the opportunity in the last 3 years here at Nikiski Fire Department to provide individual-centered care in the out-of-hospital environment, working with our local hospital, other healthcare providers and community stakeholders through our mobile integrated healthcare program. Our program, as well as many in the state, has been very successful in helping fill the many gaps in healthcare, especially in rural Alaska. Our program, fortunately and unfortunately, has solely operated on grant funding and continues to operate under grant funding. Having grant funds available for our program, as well as many others in Alaska, will help, and it's very essential to continue to provide this much-needed service to Alaskan residents. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling in today. We appreciate it. Next, with the Blood Bank, Sean Case, welcome to Senate Finance. Please place yourself on the record and begin your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, Senator Merrick, and members of the committee. My name is Sean Case. I'm the Deputy Chief of Police for the Anchorage Police Department and a board member of the Blood Bank of Alaska. First responders and the Blood Bank share a common goal of providing services to all Alaskans, no matter the circumstances. I've seen extreme cases of Alaska needing blood for their survival. As Alaskans, we all embrace the value of human life and rise to the challenge of helping one another. We see that daily at the Blood Bank of Alaska from our donors around the state. Currently, there's a fragility of testing services in Alaska. As you know, we send our blood to Minnesota to be tested before it is distributed to hospitals around the state. Weather and natural disasters impact our ability to test blood, which increases risk to Alaskans. If there is one thing we hate as Alaskans, it's relying on outside resources, and we currently do just that when we send our blood out of Alaska to be tested. Donor testing in Alaska serves as an insurance policy for blood on the shelves. As a first responder, mass casualty events cause me concern, because we may not be able to respond to an increased demand for blood as we await outside testing. I'm asked that you appropriate $2 million for the Blood Bank of Alaska donor testing infrastructure so Alaskans will always receive blood donated in Alaska and we can become self-sufficient when supplying services to Alaskans in need. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Case. We appreciate your testimony. Next, in my hometown of Eagle River, Peter Penarese, if you could state your name for the record and begin your two-minute testimony. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Peter Penarese, and I'm testifying today as a private citizen and an active member of the Eagle River Valley Community Council. I testify in support of the Alaska Long Trail connection with Eagle River, Chugiak, and Aklutna. Specifically, I support the Alaska Long Trail going through Ram Valley. This improvement will provide economic and tourism-related opportunities in our area. It will minimize the impact of trails and parking areas on neighborhoods, and it will provide access to Chugach State Park. Thank you for this opportunity to comment.
Thank you so much for your testimony today. In Anchorage, Caroline Storm with the Coalition for Education Equity. Please place yourself on the record and begin your two-minute testimony.
Chair Merrick and Senators of the Finance Committee, thank you for taking public testimony today. My name is Caroline Storm. I'm the Executive Director of Coalition for Education Equity, a statewide member-based nonprofit organization representing school districts and education entities. This morning, I took a quick look at the December minutes from the Bond Reimbursement and Grant Review Committee. There are 116 applications from 28 districts, of which 95 are for major maintenance. Of those 95, we know that only a handful of those will be funded. As I give testimony right now, there is a partially condemned building, school building in Fleet Ute, where one of the tasks added to the responsibilities of teachers is to empty buckets in their classrooms that are consistently filling up with water due to a leak in the roof that they do not have the money to fix. There are also three school buildings that I know of that do not have working fire alarm or fire suppression systems. Teachers in those schools are now tasked with doing a fire watch every hour. These conditions are not acceptable conditions for our kids. These problems could have been mitigated with regular maintenance had our education budget kept up with inflation. These are now much more costly major maintenance problems that disproportionately affect our remote and rural districts, and by extension, those kids. These maintenance issues can still be addressed with adequate school district funding. Based on the student enrollment from October of 127,931 children, I am asking that you increase the education budget by no less than $180,766,503, which is $1,413 per pupil. Thank you very much for this consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Storm. We appreciate your testimony. In Soldotna, with the Alzheimer Association, Cindy Harris, welcome to Senate Finance. Please place yourself on the record.
Hi, my name is Cindy Harris. I live in Soldotna, and I'm a board member for the Alzheimer's Association Alaska chapter. I'm calling to show support for Alaskans with dementia and their caregivers. 25,000 Alaskans provide unpaid care to loved ones with dementia. They need respite care. An increased grant funding for adult day respite would allow more caregivers to access the help and support they need. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for calling in. In Homer, with the Governor's Council on Disability and Special Education, Patrick Reinhart, welcome to Senate Finance. Please place yourself on the record and begin your 2 minutes.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Patrick Reinhart. I'm from Homer and Executive Director of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Ed. Many of you hosted our council members last week for our annual advocacy trip, which we greatly appreciated, as well as the members of the Statewide Independent Living Council. I'd like to discuss a few items of interest in the budget as it stands today. Some of these might sound familiar because we talked to you about them last week, but some of them are related to some of the underfunded portions of the mental health budget. I'm going to highlight a few of them today, but I also did send in a longer description of some of these issues for you to consider. The first one I want to highlight is the Alaska Autism Resource Center. The Alaska Autism Resource Center serves the needs of individuals of all ages with autism spectrum disorders, their families, caregivers, and service providers throughout Alaska. Autism training and education are critical components of Alaska's overall autism priorities. It's managed by the Department of Education with a contract to a special education service agency. And currently in the budget, the $50,000 for the Autism Resource Center was left out of the general fund mental health budget. In addition, I want to highlight the transit match funding that we talked about last week. Many of you, prior to FY18, the state put in general fund dollars to help transit providers with their local match requirements for various federal transit program grants for operational support, capital equipment, and facility purchases. During the epidemic, match was not required in most cases, and extra funds were provided to transit providers across the state. But this has all gone away, and we fear that significant amounts of federal transit funds will be left on the table if we do not help them come up with the required match of 10%, 20%, and sometimes 50%, depending on the program. Our local transit providers are critical for seniors and people with disabilities. They provide rides to shopping, healthcare, and more. A $1 million investment in the capital budget will allow providers the opportunity to use the formula funds, but also apply for competitive federal grants for new buses, improved or new transit facilities, and hopefully extra funds to help clear snow around transit stops and critical pathways.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Reinhart. We appreciate your testimony today. We will now go to SITCA, Christine Pate, with the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, hello. My name is Christine Pate. I am the Legal Program Director at the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of restoring $4 million to the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault budget. Our program receives CDVSA funds, and our work with survivors will be at risk if this funding is not restored. And so the statewide coalition of 24 domestic violence and sexual assault programs, 21 of which are in rural Alaska. Our legal staff is a small staff of three attorneys and two paralegals that provide civil legal services to survivors statewide. Our legal staff is based in Anchorage and Sitka. To staff cases, we also use volunteer attorneys or private attorneys who agree to do free legal work for survivors, and contract attorneys who agree to work at a reduced rate. In FY23, with these limited resources, we were able to provide legal services to 266 survivors, and our volunteer and contract attorneys donated $675,000 in legal services to survivors, donated services which will be at risk if we lose CDVSA funding. So what are civil legal services? Imagine you're a young mother of two children, and your husband has started physically abusing you. You don't work, and as part of the cycle of abuse, he has physically isolated you. Every few weeks, there are acts of strangulation, hair pulling, and screaming obscenities in front of you and your small children. He tells you that if you go to the police, he'll kill you and take your kids. He keeps loaded guns around the house that make you sure this will happen. What do you need to be safe? You need a protection order because leaving is the most dangerous time for survivors. You need custody of your children to keep your kids safe. You need possession of your home and child support to financially get on your feet. These are all services that only a civil legal attorney, not the criminal justice system, can provide. But in the civil justice system, there is no general right to counsel, so that a survivor has to go look for help from a small patchwork of nonprofit legal programs, including ours, that provide the services. Even with current levels of funding, we are not able to meet the current need for survivors, and we have to turn people away. A $4 million cut to funding will mean that we would lose one attorney and a part-time paralegal, and we would not have funds to contract with attorneys or support our volunteers, effectively reducing the legal work we could do in half.
Thank you, Ms. Pate.
Please, our state remain, please
Thank
restore
you,
Ms. the critical
We appreciate
funding.
Your
Thank
testimony
you.
Today. In Chugiak, we have Will Tagan. Mr. Tagan, welcome to Finance. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Will Tagan in Chugiak. I'm here in support of the Alaska Long Trail, specifically the Chugiak Eagle River section. Ram Valley in particular is a key link that would extend the existing Crow Pass Trail to the communities of Eklutna, Chugiak, and Eagle River. Last year, the Eagle River Chamber of Commerce used Base Camp Eagle River as their theme for their Bear Paw Festival in anticipation of these new connections to our community. I realize $1 million is a high ask, but that also includes a parking lot, which would provide fees for the maintenance of this trail directly to Chugiak State Park. So once again, definitely in support of Ram Valley, and I hope you guys can fund it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Tagan. We appreciate you taking the time to call in. We will go to the Anchorage LIO for one more testifier, and then I will hand over the gavel to Senator Wilson. In the Anchorage LIO, Heidi Hill with Abused Women, Aid in Crisis. Welcome to Finance. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Heidi Hill, and I am the Grants and Program Director at Abused Women's Aid in Crisis, and thank you for allowing me to provide testimony today. AWAKE is very concerned about the cuts to the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. We have been providing services to victims of domestic violence in Anchorage since 1977, and we are the only emergency domestic violence shelter in Anchorage. We serve all victims regardless of gender or the gender of their abuser, and every year we help hundreds of people with a range of services that help them escape the cycle of abuse and live safe and healthy lives. And as the Grants and Program Director, part of my job is to secure funding to keep our agency operating. Like I said, we're very concerned about the proposed loss of nearly $4 million to the CDBSA budget. This will translate to about a 20% cut to our shelter, non-residential, and legal advocacy programs. We may need to cut shelter positions, and our shelter space will be reduced from the current 67 beds to only 45 beds. And in a city of 300,000 people, where studies have shown that 50% of women have experienced domestic violence and or sexual assault, we can't afford to serve fewer people who are in need of safety. I wanted to focus on our legal advocates who are based at the courthouse. They support DV victims who are seeking protective orders, and they also provide court accompaniment and referrals to pro bono legal programs as well. Every year they help hundreds of people, often meeting with them multiple times each. They're available to help current awake clients, anyone else who walks into the DV office at the courthouse. Going through that protective order process can be terrifying, and it's really, really critical to have a caring professional who understands what the options are, what the process is, and who can provide emotional support and connections to other resources. It can come down to the difference between taking that action or not to get a protective order. These positions are a critical part of the community safety net for victims of domestic violence, but if the proposed CDBSA cut stands, these legal advocate positions will also need to be cut. Please reconsider the cuts to the CDBSA budget. Our programs and others like them throughout the state cannot function at the levels required by the need in our communities without the funds. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. We appreciate you taking the time to call in. With that, we'll take a brief at ease.
Welcome back from our brief at ease. We are now going back here to the room in Juneau. We have from the mighty Matsu, one of the mightiest cities, City of Wasilla Mayor, Ms. Glenda Ledford, and if Ms. Crystal Nygaard can also take the table as well. And we have 2 minutes, Madam Mayor. You may begin when you are ready.
Thank you, and thank you for this opportunity. I'm Glenda Ledford, Mayor for the City of Wasilla. The state budget is crucial for our rapidly growing city. We rely on state support for economic development, infrastructure, and public safety. We appreciate the governor and the legislature's assistance, but we need assurance that our city won't bear the burden of shortfalls. Our local economy depends on factors like education, housing, and public safety. Young people choose to live here for family, amenities, money, and education. We must prioritize these economic drivers to attract and retain residents and investment in our city. We must act now to prevent families from leaving our state. Let's prioritize funding for essential services and investments that drive our economy. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Ms. Crystal Nygaard.
Thank you, Senate Finance Committee. I'm Crystal Nygaard, Deputy Administrator for the City of Wasilla and a 30-year small business owner, so my focus is economic development. I come before you today to address a critical and crucial role of the economic vitality that's happening in our area. The City of Wasilla recently completed a CEDS, which is a Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, And some of those findings I would like to share with you today. One, we are experiencing net migration as new residents are moving to our area, both from different parts of the state and out of state. They are attracted by factors such as family, family lives there, schools, and public safety. However, underdeveloped infrastructure poses a challenge to our economic potential. By being our partner and investing in infrastructure such as our airport expansion, our utility enhancements, and our workforce support, we can unlock new economic opportunities and attract small businesses. Strong businesses are vital for funding essential services like schools and roads and public safety, and a thriving economy leads to lower crime rates, improved health outcomes, and increased civic engagement. Our region's strength lies in our strategic location, our financial stability, and our economic diversification. As you work on education, broadband, and economic challenges, remember to listen to the voices of small businesses seeking support for these construction projects, innovative education programs, and affordable resources for their employees. Let us embrace a people-centered approach to budgeting and economic development. Engage with industry, businesses, and cities to provide a tool for success. Let us move forward with innovation and collaboration, leaving behind outdated practices and embracing a future of economic prosperity for all. And thank you for your attention and your commitment to our shared economic future.
Thank you. We now have Ms. Stanley in the room.
Hi, I'm F. Stanley, and I'm here to speak in support of funding for HAP. I'm going to use my notes. This is my first time. Housing Alaskans Public-Private Partnership is what HAP stands for. I want to thank sponsor Senator Wilikowski for the state funding request of $10 million for HAP. It's housing development statewide. In 2023, about 750K was granted, and this led to bringing over 80 new homes to Alaska's housing stock. Just about everything in the state requires everyone needs housing, labor and commerce, all the different committees. We all thrive if people have somewhere to live. And it is projected that in the next 10 years, at a minimum, we need about 27,500 housing units. This is data you can find on the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness website. I am on the Youth Alaska Action Board on Housing and Homelessness, and one of our biggest things we've learned over doing this advocacy work is that we just need housing. Even if there's amazing supportive programs and wraparound services, if there's not somewhere for someone to go after a shelter or in crisis, if there are not housing units that people can actually move into or purchase, then we can't ever solve this issue. So I think it's a basic need we can all agree on. And that's all I have to say. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for your testimony this afternoon. I think that's everyone here in the room in Juneau. We'll go back to the phone lines, and we'll start with the Matsu LIO with Ashley Peltier.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Ashley Peltier, and I'm the director of Connect Matsu, and I'm here today on behalf of Matsu Health Foundation to express our disappointment in the proposed mental health budget in the governor's supplemental and amended operating plan budget, particularly the proposed crisis now budget. We have traditionally cared for a person experiencing behavioral health crisis in our state by either sending them to jail or to the hospital. Unfortunately, those solutions are not effective. Hospital staff do not have the expertise to provide care beyond preventing harm, and police officers are trained to provide public safety and address criminal behavior, not behavioral health crisis. Unsurprisingly, this system has delivered poor results. Matsu Health Foundation has worked to understand and improve the system of care for residents experiencing behavioral health crisis since 2013. Through partnership with the State of Alaska and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, we've invested significant staff capacity, professional consultation, and financial resources, even working to change laws to create this new response system in the Matsu. Crisis Now is a best practice framework for developing and implementing crisis stabilization services for people experiencing behavioral health crisis. In MATSU, the mobile crisis team has been partnering with law enforcement to respond to crisis situations since spring of 2023 and has served 208 residents experiencing domestic violence, suicidal ideation, child abuse, and many other crisis situations. Connect MATSU is working to build out a post-crisis care system, connecting clients to resources that will prevent future crises. Wasilla law enforcement are thrilled to have these new supports, and Palmer PD and Alaska State Troopers are looking forward to them as well. The system in Wasilla is working so well that it will soon expand across the borough. This is no small lift, and we need support at all levels. We urge you to match the funding recommendation from the Mental Health Trust by adding $1 million to the governor's proposed Crisis Now budget to ensure this system continues to grow in impact. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, from the MATSU LIO, we'll go to Mark Lackey from the Head Start Association.
Good afternoon, members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Mark Lackey, and I am the Executive Director for CCS Early Learning, one of 17 Head Start grantees around the state of Alaska. I am speaking today on behalf of the Alaska Head Start Association and speaking in alignment with the larger association, the Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group. Head Start and child care programs around the state are in crisis. You know this. Over 150 child care businesses have closed in Alaska since 2019, and sadly, tragically, under your watch and under my watch, the program I'm responsible for operating in the MATSU to support the most vulnerable children and families in our community now joins that list. Our board of directors recently made the decision that our Meadow Lakes Head Start program, which has served this community since 1997, will shut down after this school year due to lack of funding, and it will not reopen. When the legislature provided a $5 million increase for Head Start last year, after 13 years of flat funding, it set the stage to return the state to a full 20% match against the $62 million of federal funding that comes into our state annually. I was thrilled. When the legislature made this appropriation one time, I knew that our program still had a good chance to make it through this current session. We would have one more year. But then the governor vetoed 70% of that one-time appropriation, and that one-year lifeline was pulled from our grasp. One half of the children that CCS Early Learning enrolls and serves are either in foster care or they are homeless. These are Alaskan children. And next year, CCS Early Learning will serve 95 fewer Alaskan children. Paying 20% to protect and nurture and sustain the federal investment to bring Alaskans' federal tax dollars back to our state is so smart. But we aren't doing it. Instead, we are setting ourselves up for the full consequences of our inaction. And as a state, we will pay 100% of those bills. Increased funding for Head Start and child care is desperately needed to support the recommendations from the governor's child care task force. Alaskan children and families can't wait any longer to become our top priority.
Good to hear from you today, Mark, and thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll go to the off-net. We have Miriam Medadovia from Palmer.
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much for giving me the chance to testify. My name is Maria Medadovia. I'm calling on behalf of Alaska Trails, a statewide nonprofit with a mission of building trails for Alaska's communities and economy. First of all, I want to thank you for including over $5.6 million for the Alaska Lawn Trail project in the FY23 and FY24 state capital budgets combined. Your support is greatly appreciated. I'm calling today in support of the 21 Alaska Lawn Trail projects submitted for this year's capital budget. These trail projects span the distance between Girdwood and Denali Borough, including projects in Anchorage, Chugiak, Eagle River, and the MATSU Borough. The Alaska Lawn Trail is not just an outdoor recreation, but also an economic development project, and it has been receiving overwhelming bipartisan support throughout South Central Alaska and beyond. Today, I would like to use this time to read a select list of governmental bodies, organizations, and industry groups that provided resolutions of support and letters of support over the past 3 years for the Alaska Lawn Trail. For statewide support, we have Alaska Travel Industry Association, National Park Service,
Alaska Hut Association, Alaska Chapter of the American Society of Landscape Architects, and Alaska Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Going from north to south, in the interior region, we have Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly support, Denali Borough Assembly support, Explore Fairbanks, Nordic Ski Club of Fairbanks. In the Matsu Borough, we have support from the Matsu Borough Assembly, the City of Palmer, Matsu Convention and Visitors Bureau, Matsu Health Foundation, the Sea Dog Ski Area, and the Matsu region of the Alaska State Park. Going south in Anchorage, the support from Anchorage Assembly, Chugach State Park Citizens Advisory Board, Iklutna Valley Community Council, Eagle River Valley Community Council, Girdwood Board of Supervisors, and Anchorage Park Foundation. And on Kenai, we have support.
And Miriam, if you could wrap up your comments, your time's up.
Yep. Yeah. With this wide and significant support for the project, we ask you to include the 21 Alaska Lone Trail projects in this year's state capital budget. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Next, from the City of Palmer, we have AC Wrestler. AC, if you can put your name on the record and you have 2 minutes for your testimony, you may begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. We look forward to seeing you here at the Arctic Winter Games in about 16 days. So I'm Casey Wrestler. I'm the president and CEO of the Matsu Convention and Visitors Bureau based in Palmer. The organization promotes the Matsu Valley as a premier visitor destination to Alaskans and out-of-state residents. We represent more than 250 businesses located throughout South Central Alaska. Tourism is a leading economic industry for the state and our region, and outdoor recreation plays a big part of that. I'm calling in today to voice our organization's support for the Alaska Long Trail projects, in particular the 8 Matsu projects included in the FY25 CAPSIS as part of the capital budget. Trails provide tremendous value to our local residents by providing amazing recreation opportunities, but they also have a big economic value in that they attract visitors from around the world to our area and the rest of the state. Those visitors come for world-class hiking, but they stay in our hotels, eat at our restaurants, and spend at small family-run businesses throughout our region and state. Funding trail infrastructure projects is an investment in not only our economy, but also our communities. Specifically, we support the GPRA Traverse, the Reed Lakes Trail, and the Byers Lake Loop Trail. These projects are in Hatcher Pass and Denali State Park, two regions of the Matsu Valley highly visited by tourists and residents alike. The Alaska Long Trail has supporters from countless individuals and organizations around Alaska, including ours. I encourage you to invest in these projects to make the vision of the Alaska Long Trail become a reality. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, AC. Next, we will go to the Upper Sioux and Talkeetna with Howard Carbone.
Hi, thank you. I'm Howard Carbone from Talkeetna, Alaska. I'm calling in support for funding Alaska Long Trail projects, especially the 4 in Denali State Park. My family has owned a tourism business operating in Denali State Park for 20 years. We show off Alaska to thousands of guests a year on park trails. We employ local guides, and last year we paid over $13,000 in Denali State Park user fees. Tourism businesses like ours are the backbone of our area's economy. South Denali has tremendous tourism potential. However, we have seen it become more degraded every year to the point where many of the trails we use are now closed or so damaged that they are unusable. For example, the Byers Lake Loop Trail should be a flagship attraction for Alaska, but it has only been open for 4 out of the last 20 years. The trails we still use are becoming so degraded that they pose serious safety concerns. In tourism, we have to offer a reliable, safe, quality experience to our guests, but the condition of Denali State Park makes that extremely difficult. The popularity of trails in Denali State Park has exploded over the past decade, but our business growth is limited until existing trails are repaired and open, and we can show off in Alaska that we're proud of. Repairing and upgrading these trails will benefit the many Alaskans who hike, hunt, and guide these trails, but it will also spur renewed investment in an area with great potential for growth. Investment in the Alaska Long Trail will have similar effects across the state and will diversify Alaska's tourism industry. Decades of tourism industry marketing have pushed Alaska as a cruise destination and have ignored the other kinds of travelers. Alaska stands to gain greatly from becoming an adventure travel destination. The Alaska Long Trail is exactly the kind of high-profile attraction that will bring here people from all over the world and spur economic boom, as accommodations, restaurants, outfitters, and other services open to meet the demand. Please support these projects, especially the ones in Denali State Park. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Staying in the Upper Sioux, we go to Noel Cabon.
Hello. My name is Noel Carbon. I live in Talkeetna. I'm asking you to increase funding for education. There's nothing more important than ensuring Alaska's children have the best education possible, and our schools just cannot do that anymore without increase in funding. As a mom of a child in high school, I'm seeing how the schools are being asked to do a lot more with less funding. And students are feeling it, and my student is feeling it. She has had lack of access to certain classes that are given in most high schools. She's concerned that this creates a disadvantage when it's time for her to apply to college. To be clear, this is not her school's fault. They are doing absolutely the best they can with what they have. Lastly, I do want to say that I have a 20-year-old son who is deeply interested in studying engineering. He is Alaskan through and through, but he chose to go to university out of state because he felt that the lack of funding being put into our university system was a deficit, and he wanted access to things that just weren't offered here. I am concerned about the brain drain happening in Alaska. I think it's really important that our young 20-somethings people want to come here and make a life and stay here and grow our communities and create healthy communities. And without investing in our university system, that is not happening. So thank you so much for taking my comments.
Thank you. Next, we'll go just south of Matsu, back to Anchorage for Betsy Baker. Are you with us, Betsy?
Yes, I am. My name is Betsy Baker. I'm from Anchorage, and I'm speaking in my personal capacity. Thank you for your work as members of the Senate Finance Committee and for this chance to address you. I've long been active in the emergency cold weather shelter for families in Anchorage, and I urge all of us to pause for a moment and remember that 51 unhoused neighbors in Anchorage died on the streets last year. It is truly a shocking number, and many remain at risk in this new year in Anchorage and around the state. I ask you to support two capital projects that directly address homelessness, the Homeless Assistance Program to the AHSC in the tune of $2.8 million, and the Special Needs Housing Grant also to the AHSC, $1.7 million. The Alaska Mental Health Trust recommends these amounts, but the governor's amended budget eliminated them. Time allows me to offer just one example of how the Homeless Assistance Program offers critical services. The Emergency Rental and Rapid Rehousing Funds supported by the Homeless Assistance Program are a proven means to keep people housed. Indeed, one of the most effective ways to address homelessness is to keep people who are at risk of it from falling into it. Both the Homeless Assistance Program and the Special Needs Housing Grant focus not only on providing physical shelter, but also on ensuring the services that individuals need to obtain and retain housing. There is a massive nonprofit and volunteer effort that helps keep many of these services going, but we cannot do it alone. We need the state to support this critical statewide issue. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Next, we'll go to across the inlet to Tyonek to Christy Gomez.
Hello, thank you, Chair and Committee, for allowing me to testify today. My name is Christy Gomez, and I'm principal of Tabona School in Tyonek, Alaska, a small K-12 school for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. I'm a passionate advocate for quality public education, and I thank you for allowing me to express my strong support for increased funding for our schools. Our school is the backbone of our small rural community, shaping the future of our children and contributing to the overall well-being of our society. However, the current funding levels are insufficient to meet the growing needs and challenges faced by our educational institutions. So increased funding for schools is essential really for several reasons. Quality education, adequate funding for crucial for providing quality education that equips our students with the knowledge and skills needed to succeed in an ever-changing world. Teacher support, additional funds can be allocated to attract and retain talented teachers, provide professional development opportunities with attention to supporting the needs of the Alaska Reads Act, reduce class sizes that create a more conducive learning environment. Equity in education. Additional resources can be directed towards schools and underserved communities, addressing the existing disparities and ensuring that every child has equal access to high-quality education. Innovative programming. So increased funding can support the implementation of innovative educational programs that is culturally responsive, including STEM initiatives, arts programs, extracurricular activities, enriching the overall educational experience for our students. So I urge you to consider the long-term impact that increased funding can have in the future of our community. By investing in our schools, we are investing in the potential of every child and fostering a brighter future for all. I kindly request that you prioritize and advocate for increased funding for our schools. Your support will not only benefit our students, but will also contribute to the continued growth and prosperity of all rural communities. So thank you for your attention to this crucial matter. I am confident that your leadership, we can make a significant positive impact on the education of the children of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez, for your testimony this afternoon. Next, we'll go to Rachel Lord from in Homer.
Hello, Senator Wilson and members of the committee. Thank you so much for taking testimony. My name is Rachel Lord. I live in Homer. I'm a parent of two elementary school-age kiddos, wife of an Alaskan-born sawmiller, business owner, city council member, and policy director for the Alaska Food Policy Council. My background informs my testimony today, but I am speaking for myself. First, please increase the formula funding for our neighborhood schools by no less than $680 per student. The Alaska Constitution directs the state to provide public education. My kids did not thrive in homeschool nor in charter school. My kids in their neighborhood schools are alongside schools, kids, teachers, and parents across the state who are telling you and your colleagues in the legislature the reality on the ground and the fact of inflation eating away at our K-12 budget. Next, I want to thank you for your partnership with the City of Homer on the Harbor Expansion General Investigation Study. This is an exciting opportunity to benefit South Central and Western Alaska. And to continue the GI with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, I encourage you to include $288,853 in the capital budget to continue the city, state, and federal partnership to see this study through. Additionally, I support full funding of the Municipal Harbor Matching Grant Program. I support $4.5 million in the governor's proposed budget for direct food purchases for food banks and food pantries across the state, as well as the 30 additional eligibility technicians at EPA. Revenues are an integral part of budget creation, and in the absence of responsible state revenue generation and changes to the oil tax structure, I reluctantly support utilizing a larger portion of the permanent fund earnings for state services and thus a lower PFD. This truly is a regressive move. However, underfunding schools, transportation, public safety, and other constitutionally mandated state services is also tremendously regressive. Thank you for your service and for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Rachel, for your testimony this afternoon. Next, we'll go to Anchorage to Keely Olson from STAR.
Hello. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Keely Olson. I'm the executive director of STAR, or Standing Together Against Race, based in Anchorage. I urge you to add $4 million to the CDBSA grant line in the operating budget. This is the fifth year in a row I've come forward to request the state simply maintain victim service funding. And each year there's been a band-aid approach to funding, a one-time fix. Just the amount we need to maintain the same level of funding we've had for the last 5 years. No raises, no cost of living increases, no recognition inflation makes providing services more expensive. It's no way to manage a trauma-informed survivor response agency. Waiting for the final budget to drop in mid-February, realizing no amendments are offered to fill a $4 million void, leaving us scrambling to come forward and make our case that indeed victim services matter. They save lives, promote healing, and fill many gaps where the state's response to survivors of violent crime falls short. I'm left not knowing how much of the programming, collaborations, and working agreements we've taken years to build will be lost as of June 1st. STAR is based in Anchorage, but serves individuals and families statewide. Last year, we served 86 people in 42 rural communities and hundreds more in and around Anchorage. We respond in person 24 hours a day to sexual assault reports in Anchorage, as well as for folks flown in by troopers from rural areas of the state. We provide safety planning, emergency shelter, legal advocacy, court accompaniment, housing assistance, specialized trauma therapy, and comprehensive violence prevention programming.
We're estimating a 20% cut to programming. A cut of this magnitude will mean cuts to legal services, court accompaniment, and counseling services for survivors. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Keely, for your testimony. At this time, anyone left in the room in Juneau like to testify? Seeing none and seeing no one online, we will take a recess till 2:30. That's the time frame that we have scheduled for folks for testimony. We'll stand at ease until 2:30. We are back on the record. Seeing no one signed in, we signed up on basis. There was an error, and it's 2:45. You have into testimony. Unless people in the room walking into Juneau would like to testify on the budget bill, no? All right. We will take another recess and at ease to 2:45 p.m. We are back on the record. It is past 2:45, and we have no one here in the room in Juneau and no one online to continue to testify this afternoon. That concludes our meeting this afternoon, and tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., the committee will consider SGR 14, Support of State Seafood Industry. And with that, and there's no other staff to confirm with, we are adjourned.